Hello and welcome to This Way Up. I'm Terry Shakanovsky.
And I'm Babette Gallard.
You've come to the right place because wait until you hear what Nalin Kotchin has done. She founded something called Pink Drive, which has a series of trucks, and Nalin will tell you the story of how she established those trucks, that go into every corner of South Africa, including remote corners, to screen for cancer. And not only that, but if somebody is found to have cancer, they then hold their hand as far as possible and support them through every stage of the healthcare system to try and ensure that people do get the treatment that isn't always immediately available under the South African health system.
Here, I think it's important to say that the Sangomas and traditional healers are actually her strongest advocates because they give the people confidence to go to those trucks and seek treatment.
It's extraordinary what Nalin has created. And you'll hear now not only how she did it, but why she did it.
Pink Drive is a registered NPC. And for the past 18 years, we have been taking free women's health to the communities where there are basically no close hospitals at all. We started out only focusing on breast cancer, but the need came to us by the communities themselves wanting more services. So over the years, we've added on pap smears. We're now doing HPV screening. There's PSA screening for the men. Besides the mammography, which is the diagnostic part, recently we even started doing biopsies to try and speed up that pathway to care process. There's skin cancer screening, lung screening, as well as primary health screening. And I think that's where it's going to stop, because otherwise I'll be the National Department of Health.
So how do you do that? When you say you take those services to communities, how?
We've built massive mobile trucks. It's like a doctor's room on wheels or a mini hospital on wheels. On the one side of the truck is radiology, where the diagnostic mammography is done. On the other side is the gynecology, where they do pap smears and now HPV screening. And when there's a gynae on the truck, we can now actually even screen and treat for HPV on site. And then on the outside of the truck, we've got medical gazebos where our trained nurses will then do the PSA screening for prostate cancer for men. And then in separate gazebos, there's a skin cancer screening that gets done by a dermatologist. And then separately, there's a truck that does lung screening. That truck doesn't belong to us, but we've got a really good collaborative agreement with the owners of that truck. And yes, we are looking going forward to having our own lung screening truck as well.
How does it work? You have the trucks, you have the communities. How do they know you're coming? Who do you talk to? Do you have a loudspeaker and say, hello, hello, we're here?
None of that at all. So it's all prearranged, either with the clinics on the ground in the area where we are being deployed to, and that's a national deployment, or alternatively, it's through the district directors or the provincial departments of health, etc. So they prearrange it. I send out a team, they will go and do a recce if it's, say, far away from Gauteng, where we're currently based, you know, to put everything in place. We engage with the community leaders. We engage with all the medical people that are on the ground. We engage with the social workers, because cancer has so many elements that you need to provide to the patient. From the outset, our mandate is never to leave anyone unattended. And internally, we've got our own navigators that are employed full-time. So as soon as results come back to us, the navigator then kicks in and she starts A, phoning the patient to say, have you received your results from the clinic? And inevitably it's no. Then it's phoning the clinic to say, Nolene's waiting for her results and we've told her that she's got to come to you. Then we give them a few days and then they phone again. So it's probably by the time you can sort of get her into the system or you know that she's in the system, the navigator's probably made anything between 5 and 10 phone calls. Once the biopsy results are back, we are actually helping transport those that have been diagnosed to the closest hospital. If I use just an example where we did this for the first time in the Northern Cape, and that was from the Namakwa district, and that is 900 kilometers to Kimberley Hospital, where we had to get those patients in. So we went further. I approached Southern Sun, and they very kindly sponsored accommodation for me in Kimberley, because 900 kilometers is 9 to 10 hours of traveling, so that they could at least have a good night's rest before they saw the specialist doctors in Kimberley Hospital. That type of pushing pathway to care doesn't necessarily even happen in the private sector. So by the end of October, early November, those patients will all be in the system and have been attended to.
And I'm assuming that without that intervention, they might not even be diagnosed, but even if they were, they wouldn't be able to then go into the system and go through it.
That's one thing that we are adamant about, is getting them into the system. But no person should receive a diagnosis and then nothing happens to them. As far as I'm concerned, that's cruelty against humanity. And rather not tell someone, by the way, you've got cancer, probably stage 2, 3, maybe even 4, but sorry, we can't help you for going further.
So a million questions, but can I just go back to how you reach people? So you work through the local lead, community leaders, health authorities, and then is there a group of people waiting for you when your truck?
Yes, so we give them the numbers that we can do. According to our licensing, we can do 30 mammograms a day. We do between 50 and 60 pap smears and HPV screening a day now. We can do up to 100 skin cancer screening with a dermatologist. And then the same applies for the lung screening. And then for the public health screening, which is your blood pressure, glucose, diabetes, also probably up to 100 per service. And then for clinical breast examinations, can do between 100 to 200 a day. We have fully trained educators that can do it in the vernacular, that educate as well as help with the administration. And our one educator, together with our other patient navigator, Nicole and Intercorsa, we are now placing them 2 days a week at Helen Joseph Hospital to do the patient navigation.
If I'm understanding it correctly, that's more than most hospitals do, and you're bringing it in a single truck or a truck and some vehicles.
No, absolutely. I mean, the majority of hospitals where there are breast units and machines, if they do 5 a week, it's probably a lot. So patients can be booked for mammography, but if there's an emergency, accident, you name it, the radiographer gets called away and that's it. Come back next week.
Is it possible to put numbers on the cases that you discover and the people that you're able to get treated?
Currently, it's about 10% of every 30 that we do. Unfortunately, some of them that are now coming are all late presentations. So it's very difficult with those ones. And Pintrava is all about early detection.
What do you do in this terrible situation where you're picking up late stage cases and you know there's very little facilities available at the clinic? It's the most terrible dilemma. Do you tell the patient?
Well, the clinic is supposed to relay the diagnosis to the patient. If we don't have doctors on the truck, we don't always have, because that's a very expensive part or commodity to have. So it's only when we have corporate funding that we can afford to put a doctor on the truck. And then naturally, in her way or his way, breaks the information to the patient. But remember, there's still all the myths and stigmas attached to all of this. And it's the fear of what now? So the doctor will do a bit of counseling, but say you need to go to the clinic now, because that's actually where the referral pathway then starts. We have proper trained counselors coming with us, but that's another expense. But I must say, even though we have a health system that's sadly failed the population, there are still phenomenal doctors in the state hospitals. And because we've been around for so long, we've got really good relationships with the doctors in the state, with private doctors now even, who are willing to help us and help expedite, because they understand what the further burden is going to be. And we cannot afford to lose more women in South Africa due to a disease, if detected early, can be treated and can prolong a life. Because the more women we lose, the more orphans we're actually going to have.
Coming up next, Nolene tells us how she funds the trucks going out into the communities, dealing with stigma, and tips for listeners who might want to follow in her footsteps.
She also tells us how she deals with the heartbreak of giving someone a cancer diagnosis.
One comment I wanted to draw you back to, where you talked about having to deal with maybe the myths and the beliefs. How do you deal with that, and your doctors dealing with those sort of complicated areas?
If you go in a gentle way, you deal also with the traditional healers, which we do as well. We work with them and we say to them, you know, we're not coming to force a Western medicine on you, but there is an alternate. So we're actually here for you to help us save them and prolong their lives.
And that's kind of empowering them. Are they your advocates in some ways afterwards?
Most definitely. And, you know, we've diagnosed clinic sisters and nurses who themselves also didn't know.
You say you go to communities that don't have facilities. How do you choose those communities is the first part of my question. But the second is, I know you've been in Rosebank, you've talked about Helen Joseph, you're clearly in a metro like Johannesburg as well. So how do you decide?
Working with the provincial authorities or the district health authorities, they are the ones that tell us where to go. They don't fund us, so we still need to find the funding to go there. But it would definitely not be the right thing to just arrive somewhere.
So shall we talk about funding? How do you get this extraordinary enterprise up and running, and how do you keep it going?
When I started out, no one knew us. But the thing is, if you can demonstrate to a potential funder what their funding is going to do, and you provide them regularly and literally as soon as they've provided you with the funding and you've started spending their money on the data and what is their return on investment, you can keep them.
There's a story. You've been talking about this wide range of services that you do. Where did you start and why did you start?
I personally have not been affected by cancer, but my father was diagnosed with galloping leukemia. Misdiagnosis in the beginning, but he had a brain tumor. I lost my first husband also to a brain tumor and was widowed at a very early age. I was left with a 3-year-old and an 18-year-old. Thereafter, my younger brother was diagnosed with terminal cancer. That's 10 years ago. But I then decided I was going to leave the corporate space, and I had a very good job with a very big IT company. I left that and decided I was going to make cancer my mission in South Africa. And initially, my business model was to create campaigns for NGOs, make them self-sustainable, and then probably move on to another one. But like everything, you need a strong media partner. And I'm truly grateful to whatever media has followed me or has followed Pink Drive from inception. Thank goodness it's always been positive stories. And I then went to, it was Mnet in the days that sponsored us. And I said, I want to move on now. I want to start focusing on individual cancers. And they asked me what? And I said, breast cancer. And they said that suited them. Because at the time, some 20 years ago, 60% of their viewership was women. So we had a huge media platform. But initially, it was just an awareness program. So the second year, the then marketing director, who's now board director for Pink Drive, Koo Govender, said to me, Nolene, so what are we going to tell them? Where are we going to put the money now? I said, tell them we'll build trucks. Because she wanted something that was more tangible. And she said, why? So I said, well, a truck is a moving billboard for the corporate that invests in us. And secondly, we can tell everyone how many mammograms we've done. At that time, it was only mammograms. And we will also have the data. We have the only true data on breast cancer, even if it's only coming out of one truck, one community, one province at a time. We are the only ones that have that true data, which is now being analyzed worldwide. And that's really what happened. So the next day, I got a phone call from Pfizer, and they said to me, so Nolene, what do you know about mobile trucks? And I laughed. And I said, nothing. I think I'm going to learn very quickly.
That's what gets you where you are. Hey?
And then they said, well, come and see us. We've got money for you. But these will be the conditions. You have to collaborate with other NGOs, and we're giving you 1 year to build a truck. They gave us 3 years funding for self-sustainability, and the rest is history. And that truck is still running today, 20 years later, and it's done over 200,000 kilometers.
It must be famous. Think of the stories it could tell.
Hey? Yeah.
There must be so much heartbreak and so much hope with every outing, every time that truck goes out. There must be the hope that you've just saved a life, and there must be a heartbreak of the lives you can't save. How do you deal with it? How do you and your staff deal with it?
It's not easy. I'll be very honest with you. You know, you get that strength from within. I've realized that we won't be able to save everyone because of, you know, late diagnosis, et cetera, et cetera. But at least we are saving someone. And we know that we're making a massive difference.
It's incredible courage to look a person in the face and tell them of a diagnosis.
It's not always me. I have phenomenal trained staff, so they know exactly what to do. And, you know, if you want to work in this organization, you must have empathy, and you must be able to console someone, and you must be able to listen to those stories, but also sort of strong enough not to emerge yourself.
How do you find the people who are capable of the empathy and the strengths in equal measures?
I try and always look for someone that's been touched by cancer because they know themselves what they've been through. You know, I can't even say to someone, I know how you feel. I haven't had the disease. But someone, doesn't matter what cancer it is, they are the ones. So South Africans are actually quite giving, generally speaking. So they want to help, but they just don't know how to help. So even if it's just by volunteering time, coming to some of our events where we raise money, to keep the trucks on the ground, et cetera, because not getting any funding from the South African government, although we do their work, we are funded by Corporate South Africa, other philanthropic organizations, and other international governments.
any funders who you went to trumpet?
Rio Tinto, Exxaro, Anglo-American, to name but a few, Life Healthcare, Aspen, AstraZeneca, Pfizer, MSD, there are many, and individual South Africans as well who donate, participate. We've got Nicole Fuller. She's a breast cancer survivor. She's also my patient navigator now and is going back into Helen Joseph. So many people want to do something.
So working as you do so intimately with public health in South Africa, what are the trends you see, or actually to South Africa more broadly? You say you've been doing it now for 20 years. How are things shifting and changing?
I think in the private sector, there's big change. Looking at things like AI and all of that. But I keep saying it, sadly, our public health system has failed the population. I mean, corruption and money stolen from hospitals. And then these tragic deaths of people being murdered when they unearth it. But you know what? We're still going to carry on, or I am until I take my last breath, I'm sure, to fight for those who can't fight for themselves. And ideally, I'd like to take this model into the rest of Africa because, you know, if you're born in Africa, you are an African. It doesn't matter. And no one's going to take that out of your blood. And the people need help.
And have you had people coming forward and possibly wanting to replicate the model that you have?
Many. Their big thing is funding. If there was a global funding for Africa and they said, okay, here's the money, I would be able to demonstrate to them how well their money would be spent and that it doesn't disappear into someone else's private benevolent fund. But there isn't such a thing. And I doubt whether there ever will be for Africa.
And for the people that are moved by what they've heard and want to help, want to get behind you, how can they help?
Well, they can contact me. My number's 083-460-6146. They can send me an email, Nolene@pinkdrive.org. Or go and visit our website, www.pinkdrive.org.
And one last thing. I'm sure some people out there, the listeners, will have been inspired by you and by your determination to do what you've done. What tips could you give them? Somebody who wants to start up a small NPO or do something to change their community?
First of all, if you want to start an NPO, make sure that all your paperwork to legitimize your NPO is in place. And then know where you want to go and focus on one thing specifically. If it's in education or if it's in agriculture or if it's in health, doesn't matter what it is, but remain focused and then never give up. Just carry on. You know, don't be afraid if someone's going to turn around and say, sorry, we don't want to engage with you, or sorry, we can't fund you. Don't let that make you despondent. Move on to the next one and always tell an honest story.
And where do you personally find the courage to keep telling that honest story, to never giving up?
I've always been like that from a child. Growing up on a rural farm in Zimbabwe, I was always helping the laborers, most of my parents tell me anyway. And I was always the one at school that attached myself to all the others who were not as fortunate as many of the other kids in the school, had some form of disability. I was always the one with them.
So you've always had that view out to other people as opposed to yourself.
Yeah.
Has it affirmed your faith in humanity? Like, do you manage to stay loving and optimistic?
My staff will tell you sometimes I'm not very loving.
Can we go and speak to them afterwards?
Yeah, by all means, yeah. There's been many a time when I've wanted to give up, I'll be honest with you. And then someone says to me, well, if you stop doing this now, who's going to do it? So, you know, nothing is impossible until it's actually done.
Nothing is impossible until it's actually done. That feels like a phrase I should go and write down and remember.
Well, I think I stand to be corrected, but I think it was Madiba who said it first. And wow, does Nolene live up to the spirit of it. It's quite extraordinary, the network she's created.
And I can hardly believe that some people will have absolutely no access to hospitals without Nolene.
The other thing that struck me is what Nolene said about funding. What a tight ship she runs and how integral that has been to the success of their organization, how she's able to show funders almost immediately where their money's gone and how it's been spent. I think it has a lot to do with why she's been able to build this organization.
And the other thing that really is astonishing is the concept of navigators, these people who've experienced cancer either personally or within their own family. And they take these women and men through from start to finish of their treatment. And that is really unique.
Also, what touched me so deeply was Nolene's reminder that for every life she extends and or sometimes saves, there's a family out there, and chances are there are children who no longer face the prospect of being orphaned. That's really at the very heart of what she does.
And not to forget that the cases that don't have a good end, it's usually because of delayed prognosis.
Yes, well, Babette, that's something those of us from more privileged communities could remember too, not to neglect small health issues until they become big ones.
I've diarized it now.
Find out more about Nolene and everything else you should be diarizing on our website, www.thiswayourpodcast.org. And please rate and review this podcast wherever you get your podcasts. It will help other listeners to find Nolene and everybody else we speak to.
Thank you for listening to This Way Up.